Welcome to The Thriving Marriage, the podcast for those who want to get their spouse back in love with them and truly thrive.
You'll learn why 95% of people don't save their marriage and the secret method no one else is talking about that will change everything for you. Are you ready? Let's turn tragedy to triumph.
Here are your hosts, international marriage experts, Mark Johnston and Heather Choate.
Podcast. I'm Heather Choate with Mark Johnston. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. My husband, Ben, just walked in the door after being gone for 2 weeks. So it's always fun to see him and the kids are mauling him and it's always a happy day. But today we're going to be talking about how to stop divorce in its tracks and how to get your spouse to fall in love with you again. So leave a comment if your spouse is wanting a divorce or if things are really tense right now between you, even if they're just checked out, and let us know what's going on because this podcast is going to be for you. Before we go into this process today, we're going to share our client win of the week. Mark, you want to share that one?
Yeah, sure. So this person, we don't have a name, just, you know, to keep anonymity. Yes, that's a word, right?
Yes.
So this person just says, hi there, first post. I've been separated for 3 years. I worked on myself, but he never wanted to come home. He was still hanging around though, and I tried to figure out what was missing, but didn't know what it was until I found the podcasts for this group. So since early October, I've been using the suggestions and I've been hearing, and wow, we have moved the needle more in a single month than in the whole 3 years.
Love that. That's,
yeah, I mean, that's great. I mean, obviously, we like to share victories at all stages. And, you know, sometimes people are just starting in on the process. But definitely, like, I hear this sort of thing all the time. You know, sometimes I ask myself, okay, is this really doing much putting out this content week after week? But, you know, it seems to be that there is a fair number of people that are getting a lot of use out of this. So that always gives me some heart here. So yeah, it's good to hear that.
Yeah, absolutely. And 3 years is a long time to be separated. And so to be seeing some momentum after just a month of listening to the podcast and applying some of the suggestions is really powerful. And as many of you guys know, we are the leading expert on how to save a marriage from divorce, how to stop a divorce in its tracks, how to get your spouse to want to work on the marriage with you. We asked you guys, and I'd love to hear in the comments here, is it really possible to save a marriage that's on the brink of divorce? And I was going through some of the comments that we got, and I'd love to hear yours as you guys are watching live. You can leave a comment right here, and we'll respond to every single one of them. And a lot of them were saying, no, I can't change them. They're not wanting to. And then my marriage is past the brink. I think it's past saving. And then about, you know, 50 or 60% are saying, I sure hope so. I'm really praying. I'm hoping and praying. I really hope so. Right. So kind of this theme of either, no, I think it's too late, or I kind of just hope that it can be turned around. So Mark, what do we know after having worked with so many couples that were on the verge of divorce? And is it possible to turn it around?
Well, I do want to say that, you know, first off, it's not an easy situation. I want to acknowledge that. But at the same time, like, I absolutely believe it's possible. We've seen time and time again where some pretty extreme circumstances have done a 180. Now, that was all with a lot of support and a lot of effort, and it did take some time. And, you know, in those cases, we did see a lot of perhaps resistance to some changes. So I'm not going to, like, pretend that, oh yeah, you know, absolutely easy peasy, just this simple process to do that, but it is absolutely possible.
Right. So let's dive into this. How do we get a divorce to stop in its tracks? How do we get our spouse to fall in love with us? And before we go into what to do, what are some things that we're seeing people are doing incorrectly, or some really big mistakes that a lot of people are making?
Well, I thought this was really interesting because, like, that's the question that we brought up today is, like, okay, well, how do you stop things and how do you get your spouse to fall in love with you again? Sometimes when I'm preparing for these I will just go out and see what the advice is out in the wild. So actually, I did just that. I don't know if you did this at all, Heather, or if you've done this before, but I just typed in like how to make your spouse fall back in love with you. And I saw what I found to be some really amusing suggestions. Like I saw things like go out and buy some flowers. Why don't you surprise them with some, you know, take them out to dinner. One was like, just be open to romance in your life. Others were saying that you should apologize and just say you're sorry or make yourself into the ideal partner. And I'm not going to tell anyone that like these are bad things. It's not a bad thing to go buy flowers or say you're sorry or to work on yourself. But I don't know about you, Heather. I found some of these suggestions as kind of laughable when applied to a situation where there's a crisis. And that's like, I was even looking at places that were suggesting this, you know, for these very sort of situations where like, hey, is your partner considering leaving? Why don't you try these things? And I was just like, it seems a little out of touch, in my opinion.
I agree. And usually like they're past this phase. Like this phase is great when you are connected and when things are relatively stable between you. But if you're past the phase like where they're not in love with you anymore and they're wanting out of the relationship, they're either just going to be ineffective or, and sometimes they may even backfire. We often see that like trying to make yourself into the ideal partner turns into just this desperate attempt to try to work on themselves and to become everything that they said that their partner wanted, right? And it just absolutely backfires because your spouse either doesn't notice that you're making these changes, they don't care that you're making the changes, or they think it's just a manipulation to try to get them back. And you're not being really authentic to your real self if you're trying to make yourself into this like ideal just for your partner. It's not built on a healthy, solid foundation. And so that's definitely going to backfire. Saying sorry is a good thing. It's good to take accountability, but we also see sometimes where people are over apologizing and they're overtaking accountability for everything. And they're kind of like lambasting themselves again, out of fear and desperation, trying to get their spouse to come back. And this general advice of just take them out to dinner, be open to romance, buy flowers is going to fall flat again, because the relationship is beyond that point where that's going to be like a nice gesture that's received well at this stage. It's either just not, they're not going to care, or it could actually make things worse is what we've often seen, right? So we want to go over some different things that we do that helps our clients go from this really hard, scary situation, right, to one where they have genuine in their relationship, genuine love in their relationship again, and things are healthy and functional between them.
Yeah.
And so I'm really excited about this, Mark, because we've talked a lot. In fact, we've done over 150 podcast episodes now on our PATH process. But what we're going to share is really our latest findings, because we've been helping thousands and thousands of couples, right? And mm-hmm. So we've been really uncovering and identifying some things along the way that we've learned from all the couples that we've helped, and really refining that process even more and helping our clients get even better results. So let's talk about the first stage of this process, which we call the assessment stage. Yeah. And that's not a very sexy way of saying it. I think a better way of saying it, as far as like what people are really going to understand here, because no one's like, oh yeah, I want an assessment. Like that's going to fix everything. It's kind of one of those things like we know what people need and they might not know that they need that. So let's bring us back home to where you guys are at, right? You guys may have heard me say here on the podcast, you can't read the label when you're inside the bottle. And we're all inside the bottle of our own marriage. We're so close to it that we can't see it for what it is. And most people, in fact, even half of all of our clients really aren't sure why their spouse is thinking of leaving. Let alone, do they have any idea what to do about it, even if they do know? So most people out there are just kind of running around like a chicken with their head cut off. They're just acting out of fear, acting out of desperation. They're just hoping something sticks. They're hoping that the advice their best friend gave them will somehow work for them. They're hoping that they do the love dare, that might work, right? And they have no idea if it's actually going to work. Versus when you have someone read the label, diagnose what's really going on, and prescribe the exact treatment plan that you need to turn your marriage around. Right. So, Mark, what have you seen as far as people just kind of rushing into all of this, you know, action, maybe without really knowing if it's the right thing to do in their situation?
Yeah. Well, I think I get a sense that when people are faced with something very difficult like this, it makes sense that people want to do something about it. And so they go online and they find, you know, those same websites that I was just looking at. And they're like, okay, I'm going to do something here. I'm going to go and buy my wife some flowers. And then I'm going to try to have more sex in the relationship. And it's not going to do a lot. So I get why people are doing this, but it's so much more useful to take some time to think about some things. And I call this an assessment, not just because I think like that some professional support, someone who can actually assess what's going on is useful, but also because I think it's useful for you all to take a little bit of time to assess the situation yourself. I think for the most part at this stage, I think you said it yourself, Heather, a moment ago, that like a good chunk of our clients are coming in and they don't really accurately know why their partner is pulling away. They, you know, I'll hear all sorts of things, you know, not too uncommon. They say, well, it's just a midlife crisis, or, oh, they're, you know, they just don't like being old. So they're going to, you know, they're trying to date someone younger. You know, like, and it's these surface level, inaccurate views of why things are as bad as they are. They might say, oh, well, they're just, you know, I heard one instance where they're like, they're just jealous of how much money I make and they don't like being under my thumb. And I was like, really, is that it? They're jealous of how much money you make. Your husband is jealous of how much money you make. And that's why he doesn't want to be with you. And like a lot of these things just weren't making sense. So, you know, like mostly at this stage, what I want to help people with is gaining some understanding around a few things, making sure that, you know, there's some good look at perhaps what the internal narrative is that's been building up that really justifies leaving. You know, more often, like what I think is much more the case about why people get to this point, they've probably been building up some ideas in their head for some time. They say, my partner doesn't care about me, and I'm so feeling so alone. This feels overwhelming, and I got to get to somewhere where I can feel a little bit better. These are all more like much more about emotion and personal reasons, or, you know, some amount of blame towards the other person. But for some reason, that isn't always obvious to a lot of people. So that's like a big thing that we try to help get some understanding around, is that internal narrative. We also want to understand some very specific pain points. These often come out as very direct complaints, like, you're always yelling at me, or this never goes my way, or, you know, like, these are very acute complaints that are coming up right in the moment, that flowers or dinner or romance isn't really going to resolve. We also want to understand what the goals are for divorce. Like, why would that be such an appealing option to them, when I'm sure, as most of you know, like, divorce isn't really generally all that appealing. But for some reason, it is for your partner if they're considering that. And we have to kind of understand what that is going to provide them if we're going to have any sort of chance to divert them to a better option. Like, there's just so many little things that, and this is just like scratching the surface, really, but there's so many little things that would be so helpful to understand before you go start taking serious action, that I think it's a mistake to to skip this and just start doing things and to try and go and fix it right away without taking this time to really contemplate and figure things out. I don't know. What do you
think? And I've heard this time and time again. In fact, I hear it every single week because I talk to dozens of people about their marriage. You know, I get people on masterclasses and all of Facebook and everything like that. And our group is over 40,000 people. So I hear this, like, I tried this, I tried that. I thought that would be the right thing to do. And it totally didn't work. In fact, that's a huge reason why you and I came together in the first place, is because we were like, something needs to change. Divorce rates are on the rise. And there's all this advice and information out there, but nothing's really getting fixed. And so we wanted to uncover what it really took to turn a relationship around. And so I love what you're talking about here about that narrative. And we do talk about that in the path process, right? This is where we really want to get clarity on why your spouse is doing what they're doing. We've also talked about this, I think, in the last podcast that you and I did together about the impossible problem, right? This is the thing that your spouse is like, this thing will never change. And because it will never change, then of course I have to get divorced. Of course, this is the only really option for me, right? And so what is your spouse's impossible problem? What is their narrative? What are their pain points? We got a comment here in the Facebook group. I think she's pulling away because she's afraid of me and feels our connection was lost. And so that might be some of the pain points that you're hearing. Our connection was lost. But behind every single one of those symptoms, because their story, the impossible problem, isn't actually the real thing. There are root issues, right, we're going to talk about here, beneath that impossible problem that has created that belief, that narrative or story about you, that she's saying, I've lost connection with you. There are things that led up to her believing that and creating that story. And she says, therefore, if we don't have connection, this is an impossible problem. And so, therefore, we need to separate from each other. We need a divorce, right? So, Mark, what have you seen about this connection between impossible problems that our spouse might have and the root issues creating those?
Well, it's like you said, almost always, if the consideration is separation, divorce, there is something that this person considers impossible. We can't solve this, so it's better to come apart. The relationship there is, there's a reason why this problem became impossible, why it's viewed as impossible. You know, like this impossible problem might be something like, we can't have any connection anymore. We've fallen out of love and that we can't fix that. Or our arguments are too intense and that's never going to get any better. But something within the relationship kept those problems going and prevented them from being resolved earlier. Because, you know, the truth is that any relationship of significant length is going to encounter some problems. The healthy couples are just the ones that learn to actually address those problems in you know, effective ways. So, you know, we're talking about this relationship, you know, if we're really trying to get a good assessment, a good understanding of what's going on, we do have to understand what the impossible problem is and why it kept going and why it was never resolved. Quite frequently, that's like, usually issues around communication. It's usually issues around problem resolution. I hear time and time again, couples say, yeah, we never really actually solved problems. We just would, you know, kiss and make up, or we would have an argument and then we'd stop talking to each other and then we'd pretend it never happened. And after enough time, that just starts to become too much and people can't handle that anymore. I would say that's most often what's going on in a lot of relationships. But anyways, Heather, what do you think? Like, you know, if we're talking about this assessment stage, where do you think most people are tripping up? Where are they getting stuck here?
I think it's definitely when they're taking action on the wrong things. And sometimes they think that they're even the right things and they just have no idea that it's backfiring or it's ineffective. And that's, again, because of a lot of misinformation, a lot of maybe well-intended, but honestly, just a lot of garbage advice out there that isn't helping to really solve things. Oftentimes people are trying to solve it themselves and relying on their own wisdom and trying to just do the best that they can, and they're not getting professional guidance. And so they really don't know what they're going to do. I think about when I was diagnosed with cancer, right? First, I noticed a lump in my left breast, and that was a symptom, right? There was a root issue about why that was showing up. But if I tried to solve that myself, then I would have taken action on the wrong things, okay? I would have gone down a route of herbs and things like that that wouldn't have worked, because I later did research on them and found out that they don't work, even despite a lot of the hype around it. It's a lot more hype than actual evidence. And so I would have taken action on the wrong things. And if I tried to do it myself and just solve it myself and try to like do surgery on myself, like would that have ended in a good result? So what we're talking about here is getting a professional scientific like diagnosis, right? To know what's really going on so that you can then get the right treatment plan so you can have the solution that you're wanting to have. And so making sure that you're not trying to take matters into your own hands, because if you already knew the solution to these problems, if you already had the skills to turn this around, then you wouldn't even be in this problem in the first place. Like Mark said, like those with healthy functional relationships are those that know how to resolve issues. And right now these issues have gotten so big and so bad. You're kind of like me with my cancer tumor. It's beyond me to save it on my own. I need to get expert outside guidance. But Mark, what do you see? Where do you see people getting stuck here?
I see people getting stuck when, you know, they're trying to talk to their partner and they're getting a lot of resistance. I hear a lot of times when, you know, like I was just talking to a guy the other day, he was saying, yeah, my wife, she was kind of thinking about some separation. So I thought I'd just give her a lot of space, maybe give her some room to clear her head. And, you know, it was like a month later after that, where she's like, I don't want just separation. I actually want a divorce. And I was like, oh, well, you know, you saw some resistance. Like you saw this like problem and then you just backed off and you're like, okay, maybe I should just not do anything here. And I think it was a big mistake in that case. I think, in my opinion, in that case, this was a plea from a wife who wanted something to happen, and backing off just may have looked like he wasn't interested. And anyways, so I see a lot of problems there. Like when the problems come up and we start seeing a little bit of complaints and concerns and resistance, I do see people getting stuck with what to do with that.
Yeah. So touching on a couple other common mistakes, like we hear a lot about this no contact rule. It sounds like they were kind of taking that advice of this no contact rule. And that usually absolutely backfires unless it's done in the right way for the right reasons. So again, it's like you don't really know what the right things to do are. And even if you do, are you doing them correctly? Are you doing them with guidance from an expert that knows how to give you feedback, how to give you accountability, help you know if you're actually doing them the right way so that they're actually being effective? One of the things that we do with our clients is we give them feedback. Like we show them exactly what to text your spouse, you know, like what to respond to texts, how to open conversations. Is it the right time to have that conversation? Is it the right time to address this issue, or is it not the right time? Because if you're trying to resolve deep issues too soon, that's going to backfire. You guys may have heard me talk about that before with a medical analogy, right? But it's like, if you have a brain tumor, and then you are in cardiac arrest and you go into the ER, are they going to operate on the brain tumor first? Or are they going to stabilize you, right? They're going to stabilize you, get you out of cardiac arrest. And then when you're stable, then they will operate on the brain tumor. But so many of you are like trying to resolve these deep issues. You're trying to talk about why they're having the affair. You're trying to like make all these changes from all these years of negative feedback. And it's not the right time because your relationship is not stable enough. It's not healthy enough to have those conversations. And so those things are going to be backfiring as well. And then you get this resistance, right? Like Mark said, your spouse is resistant to talking to you. They're resistant to working on the marriage. They're resistant to getting help about it. They're resistant to wanting anything to do with you right now. And then you take that resistance as feedback and you let that be the answer for your entire relationship. So many of you are looking to your spouse for signs of hope that things are going to turn around. And to me, that's like going to an alcoholic or a drug addict to see if there's hope that they just suddenly want to be sober. It's not going to happen. And so you need to take positive action. You're the one that's in a healthier, more emotionally sober place yourself. And so you're the one that needs to take action to turn things around. Just like you don't rely on the drug addict to suddenly have this like come to Jesus hallelujah moment and like want to completely change their life, right? You get them the help, you get them the support, and you don't do it alone. These things do require a lot of outside professional care and guidance. So what is the main action that needs to be taken at this stage, Mark?
I think it's a good question. If we're just going to sum things up here with this, I think the main things to focus on are just making sure that there's lots of communication, lots of empathy, lots of understanding. We're trying to just really figure things out at this stage. This might mean a few decisive steps, but it's mostly about setting up some decisive steps. Mm-hmm. So like if we're talking about something very decisive, the only thing that I would be really looking for from this stage, and that's after we've had a lot of questions and communication and whatnot, is really just communicating a desire to make changes and send some expectations of change that need to be made. I see very much this stage as setting things up, and the end of it is like, okay, now that we understand some things, this is my intention and what I'm going to do. Not that that in and of itself is going to fix things, but it's setting up or being able to fix things through the later stages, if that makes sense.
Right.
You go ahead. What were you going to say?
So each relationship is just so unique, and the challenges that you're facing are not going to be the same ones that, you know, the client that Mark just talked to earlier this morning is going to be facing. And that's why it's so important to know what's really going to work for you. And we do that just kind of like a doctor is going to take the vital signs. They're going to run the tests. In fact, there's some communication tests that we run clients through. There's some tests that we run you through to see, can you actually resolve one issue today? Can it be resolved? Usually a minor issue. We kind of test to see the strength of that relationship, and we get that feedback so we know where things are at. And how good would it feel to you, instead of guessing or wondering or hoping or praying, you actually know what you need to do. You know what the problem is, and you know how you need to solve it, because an expert told you that that's exactly what's going on, because they know how to read the label on your bottle. They know how to diagnose it, and they prescribe the exact treatment plan that you need. Would that feel good to you? Would you like be like, okay, I'm not doing this alone. I don't have to just wonder. I don't have to just guess. I don't just have to wonder and hope. Like, maybe this will work out somehow. It's just going to be a miracle, right? No, it's like, it's not a miracle. It is, but it's also not, like, because you're following proven steps that you take to get there. So if you want us to read the label on your bottle, just leave a comment and say, read the label, and we will send you a link to our free marriage assessment where we will do exactly that. We'll read the label on your bottle. We'll diagnose what's really going on, and we'll prescribe the treatment plan that you need to get to where you need to go. And that will help us know, set the stage for what we need to do next, so that every action that you make from this point going forward is going to be effective. To me, that would be a lifeline. Like, that would be amazing. And it was amazing, like, as I was going through cancer, to be like, okay, this is the exact treatment plan that we need to go through, and now we just need to do it. And I'm here with you, and I do this every single day. It's what I do. I see this case all the time. For me, it's just another Tuesday, right? And for Mark and I, this is just another Tuesday, because we're recording it on a Tuesday. And we're here because we know how to help people in this exact situation. We know exactly what to look for. We know how to test and measure the strength or the weakness in your relationship. And even if it's low on the scale, even if you test very weak, we know exactly where to take you from there to build up that strength into the relationship through this process. So this part is so important. And this is where I think most people don't save their marriage, is because they don't get the right help. They're trying to do things on their own, and they don't really know why their spouse wants out or what to do about it. And the things that they are doing aren't working. And then because it doesn't work, they think, I can't save my marriage. It's too late. I must be beyond help, right? And more often than not, that's not the case. It's just you haven't been doing the right things that actually work to turn a relationship around. Now that brings us to the second stage, which is the resistance stage. Now this is going to be new. At least it was new for me as I was learning about what Mark's been understanding working with all of our clients. And I really love it because I think it really speaks to the actual process of what you're going through when you turn a marriage around. Right now, your spouse is resistant to you. And we actually expect that. We know that your spouse is going to be resistant to you. And we actually use that resistance to our advantage in this process. And we'll explain why. So Mark, what happens here in the resistance stage? So now we've done the assessment. We know what's going on. We know what we need to do. Why do we expect resistance right away? And then what do we do about it?
So, you know, working with our clients, or even sometimes there are some people out in the wild that do stumble upon some good actions, and they're saying, okay, I know what I need to change. This is what I'm going to change. And they go about and do it. I called this the resistance stage because I found that, like, working with so many people, I would help clients, you know, be very gentle and kind and understanding and make the changes that they're needing to make within the relationship. And for one reason or another, their partner seemed to get more upset when they were making positive changes. And so that's why we're calling it the resistance stage, because, like, it's to be expected. And a lot of people will freak out and get, and like you said, they'll say, oh no, you know, this is going on. It must be impossible for me to fix things now, but that's just not the case. We're seeing this resistance because the relationship got to a point where, because there's a consideration of leaving, there just really isn't much trust in change right now. The resistance is there as a way for your partner to protect themselves. They say, here is another attempt for things to be different. Can I actually risk having some hope here? And they say, no, I can't. And that's why they're considering separation or divorce. They say, I can't afford to have any hope that things could be different anymore. And honestly, I don't think it's a great idea to fight that too much right now. Like, I don't think that it's a good idea to take away that effort that they're putting in to protect themselves. We can, if we do this right, your husband, your wife will put down their guard on their own. So, like, we actually, like Heather was saying here, we actually kind of want to use this resistance to go along with the process, and to a certain extent, even maybe encourage your partner to doubt some of the changes a little bit. I don't know. What do you think, Heather? Like, what is this really all about? Like, why? What are we trying to do with this resistance stage? What are we trying to change? How are we trying to affect the relationship at all?
Yeah. So first, I just want to make sure that I'm understanding it correctly so that our audience is understanding it correctly too. Sure. So this resistance stage is where your spouse can often get more upset. Actually, they can even get more distant. They can even go colder, but that's what we actually expect to happen. Sometimes I relate this to kind of like lancing a wound. Right? It's like you have to get kind of this ugliness, this gunk out of things so that you can like reduce some of that tension there. Right? Am I understanding that correctly, Mark?
More or less. Like, it's not so much like get it over with, let's lance this. It's more like the resistance is there for a purpose. It's meant to your partners trying to protect themselves, and we don't want to fight too much against that. I just think that there's better ways for that resistance to die off more naturally, and we want to recognize it for what it is. We want to recognize it that it's a problem with trust rather than something else.
Gotcha. So it's kind of like so many people have this resistance from their spouse, and they're just trying to like break down that wall of resistance. And what we're suggesting is, let's not try to break down the wall right now. your partner has it there for a reason, and eventually the wall will just kind of come down on its own. And this isn't necessarily the right stage to be trying to make them put it down. And it's more about building up this idea that things could be different to help them see the possibility of things being different and building up some trust in the changes that we're making. Is that right?
I think, yeah, exactly. A big part of that is like, let's pretend here, Heather, that you yourself are feeling insecure about like our interactions. And let's pretend then I come at you and I'm saying, well, why are you feeling so insecure? You shouldn't feel so insecure. I'm a good guy and you should feel safe around me. Like, what's going to be the reaction there? Is you're going to be like, oh no, this is a threatening situation. I'm going to protect myself even more. And that's what a lot of people are reacting to, as a, you know, opposed to, you know, same sort of scenario. Like, if this is a really unsafe situation, I'm like, hey, look, I get that there's some reasons why you might not feel safe with me. And I want to really acknowledge that. I really want to accommodate that. And I want to make sure that, you know, there's a lot of communication here so that if we do have to interact, that you do feel safe, because that's what's important to me. And that feels like a lot better of a situation. And that's kind of how I'm viewing these sort of scenarios. So then how do we like take that sort of exchange that I just hypothesized right there and apply that to the relationship as a whole? That's why it's like, hey, this is the resistance stage. We don't want to necessarily take away that resistance right now. We're actually, the whole purpose of this is to acknowledge it and to make the other person feel like, hey, it's okay. You don't have to trust me right now. I'm going to show you that this can be a safe situation.
Okay, gotcha. So instead of just saying, well, why don't you trust me? You should trust me, which isn't going to help them feel heard. It isn't going to help them feel respected. What you're doing is you're actually saying, I respect that you feel that way. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I understand why you feel that way. And even in that right there, that's taking the pressure off, right? That's increasing understanding. And it's helping to build a level of safety and trust in the relationship, because you're trying to understand rather than just change the other person. You're validating how they feel instead of telling them that they shouldn't feel that way, right? That they shouldn't do those things. We talk about the demand that you change, the demand that you talk to me. Actually, I can understand that you don't want to talk to me right now. I understand that you don't want to work on the relationship. I can understand that, right? So we're increasing some understanding and some validation. So Mark, why is it almost a good thing here to have some resistance from your partner while you're trying to fix things?
That's a really good question, because it doesn't seem intuitive like that would be necessarily a good thing. But, you know, like in my opinion, let's say that they're saying, I don't want to talk. I don't want to fix things. I don't want the marriage to work. And here you are, you're taking some positive action. You know, like for the one, on the one hand, it does show that there's a lot of dedication and commitment. Just even that by itself is a positive thing. It can be something that's very soothing, something very, it feels very like a much more secure situation. Like, hey, here's this really rough situation. I'm not really giving a whole lot of indication that I think that this could work, but they're still trying. It must be something very important to them. But even beyond that, you take away the pressure of like trying to fix the relationship you take away the misinterpretation that this is for personal or selfish reasons, because that, I'll be honest, comes up an awful lot. I hear time and time again, partners saying, oh, they're only making changes because they need me in their life. They want me back because they have to have me. They need to control me. Well, if we're saying, no, you can keep your guard up and I'm not going to take away necessarily these plans to separate. I just really think that some things need to change between us. The changes seem more real, more genuine. So like getting to this level in some ways can really help solidify that like the changes are real here, and that's exactly what we're wanting. Even further, just by like doing this and not being very demanding, not getting overly upset, you're showing that like their concerns are important to you. It's just overall, there's a lot of good things that can come about when your partner is getting upset and angry and dramatic and intense, and you're showing a very calm, collected, very thoughtful sort of demeanor. It really does a lot to solidify your case that things could be better.
Gotcha. So, and I see some comments here that people are saying, yeah, I'm seeing resistance from my spouse. They're getting colder. That seems to describe response from my attempts lately. And we also have a comment here. Yeah, it feels like you're describing my life. and then her unwillingness to change some things, unwillingness to communicate. And then this comment here, it is hard to give trust if they were the one to break the trust. So if they were the one that broke the trust at this stage, in the resistance stage, what would you want them to focus on?
That's a really tough situation because, you know, instinct would tell us, like, or what justice would tell us, would say, okay, well, they broke the situation, they need to fix it. And I know that it's rough, but, you know, like my thought here is if, you know, I'm assuming that in these cases, the other person that's not listening to us is the one that's considering leaving. So that person who's broken the trust, like, why would they put in a whole lot of effort to fix things if everything has been nuked? It's been broken, even if it's by their own doing. You know, most cases in that sort of situation, I'm wondering if this is a cheating partner, but in terms of affairs, I see a lot of cases where the cheating partner says, well, I've really messed things up. It's going to be so much effort to try and fix this. I can't fix this. It's impossible to fix this. So I'll just, you know, I'll keep going in that direction. So what I'm getting at here is you're asking, well, what do we do when they're the one that's broken some trust? Is I still think that there is some trust that you need to build with your partner. And there's still a reason why they feel like there's no hope to fixing things. And there is some effort that needs to be made to say, hey, this is an okay situation here. We can make some changes. We can figure things out. And I think that's a lot of effort that you, the person who's still very much interested in the marriage, need to do, even if there's a whole lot of mistakes from your other partner. Now, I know that that's unfair. I will say that when I work with clients, we do get to the point where we try to balance things out. But at those early stages, it's not going to feel fair. I'm sorry.
Right. It's not going to feel fair because it's not. But that doesn't mean it's going to be that way forever. And it doesn't mean that you're justifying or excusing what they're doing. Yes. And we do help our clients in these situations with affairs, infidelity, broken trust, to create safety that they need to have in the relationship by putting in healthy boundaries as well. But there's a reason why your spouse is doing what they're doing. And so if you're wanting to turn things around, you are going to be the one that needs to go first. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you just have two unwilling people, and two unwilling people does not equal any relationship at all. So if you're wanting to turn things around, then these are the steps that are going to need to be had in order to do that. So where do most people get, well, what is the main focus really here of this resistance stage? We know we don't want to get that to be demanding. We don't want to get overly upset. We want to show that their concerns are important to us. And we actually want to just kind of lean into the resistance almost, right? Like we want to just say, okay, it's okay that you have this resistance right now, rather than trying to like tear it down or force that they just get over it or just try to like bust through all their resistance, right? We're actually going to just say, you know, this is okay that you have this resistance. What are some of the positive things that we can do though in this resistance stage? What's the main focus point?
Well, this is where we come back to like what you and I, Heather, have been talking about for years and some of the roots that we have. I think the main purpose of this stage is about building up trust, especially around, you know, like what you and I would call the new like a new narrative or a story. So we're very much about building up a narrative within a relationship. It's a narrative being like this collection of beliefs, the way that the relationship that that you within that relationship are describing each other. And you know, I think there's a lot of recognition kind of tangentially, is that the right word, in some other theories out there. I know Gottman, you know, recognizes within that program the importance of like the narrative. I mean, we talk about the four horsemen of divorce, and like one of those big ones is contempt. And that's very strictly speaking, that's a negative narrative. It's a negative collection of beliefs about someone else. So like, I'm getting off on a tangent here, but like the main focus of this resistance stage is saying, okay, we've gained some understanding of what's wrong. We have some understanding of what was wanted instead and what we're trying to build towards. So now we need to build this up. We need to have some consistent communication around these messages, building this narrative up, and we need to take some action that demonstrates that these things are true. I know that I'm talking very vaguely. So if I were to give it some examples, let's say that the idea is your spouse says that you've been overly controlling. So you say, okay, well, why is that such a big deal? I mean, obviously that would be a big deal, but you'd say, okay, they're saying to themselves, I don't matter. My opinion doesn't matter. My husband doesn't listen to me, is what they might be saying to themselves. So a new narrative might be like this idea that your wife's opinion is very important to you, that it's so important that she feels heard and validated, that it's very important that big decisions are made together. Maybe these are the ideas that you're trying to build up. So what then are you doing to demonstrate that those things are true? That's the focus of this stage, not to like try to convince anyone, just to start building a case that change is possible and building up some trust in that concept.
I love that. So comment here for you guys. What new story would you love to have in your relationship? How would you love for yourself to describe the relationship? And how would you love for your spouse to describe you and the relationship as well? Leave a comment and let us know. And I like this comment here that we got in the Facebook group. Yes, I believe she was seeing me as the bad guy in her story, and I'm dedicated on changing her narrative. It seems to be working little by little. And that's exactly what happens with this process, right? It is done through communicating the new narrative through home messages, which Mark coined that term and created that concept, combined with actions that are going to be consistent with what you're trying to build for that relationship. And that's going to reaffirm in your spouse's mind and in their heart that this is true about the relationship. We often talk about this as often a pattern interrupt. You're in a certain pattern right now with your spouse. They've got this wall put up now to protect themselves. And so you're trying to just pull down the wall. It's not going to work, right? We talked about that. What happens though here is you're going to create some new patterns, and it's going to get your spouse's attention. They're going to be like, oh my goodness, there is something different about Jim. He is really listening to me. He is being respectful. I feel really safe when I share things with him. He's no longer in the pattern of insert whatever the pattern is, maybe blowing up or getting defensive or shutting down himself, right? Whatever the pattern is, he's now really listening to me. I feel really heard. I feel really understood. That's going to get their attention. And that's going to help them consider the possibility of staying, consider the possibility that these changes are real. Consider the possibility of trusting that these changes are genuine, not just a manipulation to try to get them back. So Mark, where do most people normally get stuck here in this resistance stage?
I do think that a lot of people start losing heart when their spouse doesn't respond immediately with some positivity. Like sometimes I'll work with a client and I'll tell them, okay, these are the things that we're going to say. We're going to say, okay, hey, we're trying to make things better, that we want to communicate more, that we want to be more respectful. These are some expectations that we're setting. You're going about and doing this. And then they come back and they say, you know what? My husband, my wife, and I said all these things to them and they just told me they didn't care. And what do I do now? And I'm like, well, you know, this is roughly what we're expecting. We're expecting for them to try and protect themselves. And this is what we're seeing. So this is where I think a lot of people get stuck, is they're like, well, I tried doing this and it's not working. And what they're missing is that there does need to be some buildup. There does need to be some ability for you to say, hey, look, do you see what I've been doing the past 3, 4 weeks, 8 weeks? I'm doing it and I'm changing, and you're telling me that that's not possible. Something's not matching up here. The whole point of this is to be able to establish this, like, almost this ability to argue that change is real. And, you know, we don't want to argue it too much here. We just want to make the case. That's what the stage is all about, is building up to this point where we can say, hey, maybe we can consider something a little bit different. But if we don't build the case first, that's not really possible. So I think a lot of people just aren't patient enough and aren't willing to, like, build that up long enough when they keep seeing that resistance over and over again.
Awesome. And then that brings us to our last stage of this initial phase, these initial phases. And that's what we call the pause button. So for those that are familiar with our PATH process, you know, we used to start with just kind of like the pause button. Let's get you to pause. Yeah. And now we're realizing that we really need to take some more time and concentrated effort on assessing the relationship and on this resistance stage, because both are really important. They're both good, even if they're not necessarily fun, but they are good for this process. It's part of what it takes to turn the relationship around. So we're going to dive into that really in depth next week on how to have your spouse hit that pause button. And this is where things start to come a little bit more into balance. And they're going to no longer be pulling away from you more. So if you're excited for that podcast episode, leave a comment, say pause button in the comments, and we'll make sure that we get you on the live podcast episode next week, or we will send you the replay if you can't be on live. We'll make sure you don't miss it. It's going to be really, really good. All right. With that being said, I would love to hear in the comments, which of these stood out to you the most? Is it knowing what's really going on in your marriage? Having that assessment, so you're no longer guessing, you're no longer wondering, you're no longer even hoping. You can still pray, but we're going to take that prayer and turn it with action that's going to turn things around for your relationship. And we're going to know that every single action you make is going to be effective. It's going to be moving you in the right direction. And then, who here loves the idea of, let's actually embrace the resistance? Let's stop trying to fight it, because it's there. Like, we're not naive. Mark and I, we work with so many people. We know your spouse is resistant to you. You know they're resistant to you. And instead of just trying to change that or make them stop or, you know, say that they shouldn't feel that way, let's just say it's okay. And let's actually kind of use that to our advantage, or at least part of this process. And let's just embrace that instead of giving up hope. Just know that it's part of the process. Just like I had to go through resistance in cancer. I had to go through the process of going through chemo. It was part of the process. So let's just embrace it as part of the process and know that it's going to be okay. Know that you are okay. Your spouse is okay. And it's going to be okay no matter what happens. So leave a comment. Let us know what stood out for you the most. And if you want more help with this, we do one-on-one coaching with you, where we guide you through these processes. Again, leave a comment and say, read the label if you want us to read the label on your marriage, prescribe the treatment plan for you, and get you to the result that you want to have. And we'll reach out to you to get you that free marriage assessment. Now let's go to our marriage myth buster. And this one does help because it came from, you know, some of the comments that we saw even today. But this one is, it is impossible to rebuild trust once it has been broken. So we've been seeing some comments about some broken trust. I think this is a really good one. I hear this one a lot. I think it's a very prevalent idea. In fact, my 16-year-old son told me the other day that if he got cheated on, he would never trust that person ever again. That's it. Final, end of story. The relationship would be over. And a lot of people feel that way. So Mark, what have we seen about, is it possible to restore trust once it's been broken?
So I'm going to go in a slightly different direction with this. And I'm going to ask, like, is it really possible to 100% trust anyone? Like, yes, we want to say that, okay, I've made a commitment to my partner. I will never hurt them and they'll never hurt me. And we want to believe that, but, you know, like, that's part of what love is being open so deeply with someone else that, you know, there is some possibility of being hurt. Certainly there are situations that are really damaging, you know, like your son was saying. I mean, he's very young still, but affairs can really hurt. And that's a very serious situation to be dealing with. And in those circumstances, we say, I won't make a mistake again. I won't trust this person again because they've hurt me. I think the best that we can do in any situation is say, yeah, I'm pretty confident that I won't be hurt again. Or we are actively trying to work towards making sure that this is a safe situation. But like, trust, it's a delicate thing and it is easy for it to be broken. And I think that's where this like idea, this myth comes from, is because it's so painful and so difficult, and it can be difficult to put it back together. We then say it's impossible. But I don't think that's the case. So I'm thinking of a scenario, you know, someone that I worked with recently. And this was a big sticking point. We got to the point where the husband and wife were working together again. They're going out on dates. They just were having a hard time making the final commitment to like say yes. And now we're back together again. And a large part of that was this idea of trust. They said, well, I've been hurt. And I've been hurt many times. And how do I know that this is real? And honestly, this was a difficult situation because they could say, logically, this person was saying, I know things are better now. And I know, I can see that there's so much effort. I keep having these worries in my head, like what's going to happen if I get hurt again? And the solution came about is like, we had to acknowledge that it's possible that things could be hurtful and that there was a lot of effort and a lot of ability to steer the situation away from that. So that's why I was going in a different situation, because most often like the solution to this and rebuilding trust is some of that acknowledgement that like, hey, we can't 100% control everything, but there is a whole lot that we can do and we can be proactive and we can have a really good amount of safety and security. You know, for this couple, it did take some amount of just mental work where the person who was lacking trust, they had to work through some of these niggling thoughts over time, and they had to work, have those thoughts challenged, you know, both internally and within the relationship. But, you know, I'm happy to say that that couple did get back together and they did settle things. They did move back in together. And, you know, as far as I know, I assume that they're still happy because they haven't, you know, needed our support since then. So, you know, just to that question, I've seen it many times where trust has been rebuilt. It's just, I do want to acknowledge that it can be difficult, but it can be done. And especially if you want to rebuild that and you have some good support, I think it's absolutely possible.
So. Yeah. Thank you. I love that you are, I feel like we're coming to this place of just acknowledging what is, and instead of trying to like fight it, just acknowledge that, yeah, you can get hurt again. And there are things that we can do to build some strength in this relationship. There are things that we can do to rebuild some trust. But the reality is you can get hurt again. Instead of just trying to like sunshine and rainbows, like it's all great, right? No, like there is that reality. There is that reality again of there is some resistance from your spouse. So let's just kind of embrace that and recognize that that is part of the process and it's natural and there's nothing wrong with you. And it doesn't mean that the marriage is over just because your spouse is resistant. And it doesn't mean that the marriage is over just because you can get hurt again and just because trust has been broken. Now, we always want to make sure that you are in a good and healthy place and that you're not allowing people that are doing very hurtful, damaging, destructive behaviors to continue to do that. We are never going to say that you should just allow those things to happen. But I am going to say that forgiveness is not excusing or saying it's okay to treat me that way, but forgiveness is freeing yourself. And for me, when I think about that trust can never be rebuilt, is such a definite thing to say. It's honestly really tragic to me and to my heart because we've all broken trust. We've all made mistakes. Someone trusted in us. Someone believed in us. We made a promise and we didn't keep it. And if we can never be forgiven, if that was a definite, infinite, final thing, that because I broke their trust, it can never be restored, that is like hell. That's damnation to me. And that just breaks my heart. So that's not something that I subscribe to personally, because if I did, then I'd have to take that on myself. And I'd have to say, I can never be forgiven. I can never be trusted by anyone ever again. And I would live with guilt and shame and pain and insecurity and loneliness, and it would be hell. I wouldn't trust myself. And I've experienced some levels of this. You know, I think we all have probably at some times when we've broken our own trust, right? And that does feel very insecure, but it's not the only option that there is. I believe that we all can be forgiven, that we all can heal, and that we all can overcome our mistakes and our wrong choices, that we can choose to become better, and that we are all deserving of forgiveness. Again, that doesn't excuse active hurtful behavior, but that it does mean that we can choose to see the good in people and choose to have that forgiveness. And when both people are ready to be in a healthy manner, then the relationship can be restored and trust can be restored. Like Mark gave the example of the client there. We have seen so many stories and so many people's real lives where there was infidelity, there were affairs, there was broken trust. I've seen it personally in my own life. And I am grateful for those that have chosen to overcome those things that led to the broken trust, and that they chose to heal and they chose to forgive. And now they're living in a relationship that is healthy, it is functional, and it does have trust. So I know that it is possible, and I believe that it is worth it, and that the process to get there is one that is a good thing. Like Mark said, it might not be easy, but it is worth it. So next week, we're going to share with you guys SOS, Save Our Marriage. We're going to share with you how to keep your relationship from sinking. We're going to go deep into the next phase here of how to have your spouse hit that pause button so that ship doesn't sink anymore. So thank you guys for joining me today. I see so many comments. I will answer all of them, and we cannot wait to see your marriage thrive. Thank you, Mark.
See everyone.
Thanks for listening to The Thriving Marriage, your A to Z blueprint for not just surviving marriage, but thriving. Until next time, my friends, thrive on.